Paperman meets such interesting people. They know the lowdown, now it can be told. I'll tell you quite reliably off the record about some charming people I have known. For I meet politicians and grafters by the score, killers plain and fancy, it's really quite a bore. Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. They wallow in corruption, crime and gore. Ting-a-ling-ling, city desk, pull the press, extra, extra, read all about it, it's a mess, meets the test. Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. It's wonderful to represent the press. Now you remember Mrs. Sadie Smuggery.
It's the Media Project. Yes, we're back again, but not Rex Smith. He's still away. So does Judy Patrick. I'm David Gustina filling in along with my compatriots and colleagues, Barbara Lombardo, the former editor of the Saratogian, current adjunct professor at the University at Albany. Welcome back, Barbara.
Good to be here.
And Ira Fussfeld. He is the professor emeritus. He'd rather I say he was retired.
I'm not the professor emeritus.
No.
We're going to straighten this one out.
I meant publisher emeritus, Ira. He's Ira.
It's good to be back. And if Judy and Rex don't show up next week, the three of us are just going to hijack this program.
The way I hear it, Ira, you want it to be an hour?
Yeah, that's right. We've been saying that for about 30 years.
Yeah. Well, it's never happening because I'm the producer and I have to edit the show. And we want to leave them wanting more, as if that's even possible. Well, Ira and Barbara, we talked last week about Jimmy Kimmel being suspended from Jimmy Kimmel Live for his comments on MAGA and Charlie Kirk. He has been reinstated by ABC, and he returned with a defiant and empathetic monologue, says this headline from Pointer. An emotional Jimmy Kimmel showed empathy over the death of right-wing influencer Charlie Kirk, but mostly struck a defiant tone defending free speech and criticizing the Trump administration for trying to silence that right. Along the way, the pushback before the show returned, and it didn't come just from people that you would expect on the left. It even came from some on the right. Let's talk about that now, guys. Look, this was a major turning point in the current attacks on the media in terms of literally pulling a show off the air because the president and the FCC commissioner, Brendan Carr, didn't like what someone was saying. And we saw the response. I assume in some ways we're all happy that this happened, that this is a victory in some ways for free speech, but that it's not over. Ira?
You know, there's a saying that we have used in newspapers and perhaps in broadcasting as well, is that when you get a critical letter, just ignore it or digest it, but don't engage in a fight with the critical letter writer because you're only going to draw more attention to him or her than you had. Well, what did Trump do? He pointed out that Kimmel is not a ratings maker. Well, all he had to do, as Kimmel predicted, was for Kimmel to show up, and he got ratings of nearly 7 million people, not counting streaming and taking into consideration that the two affiliate companies didn't air their program. People here in Albany were not able to watch it over the air because ABC is blocked here.
It's Nextar. ABC is
Nextar. Well, at any rate, he brought attention to Kimmel, and Kimmel wound up getting more attention than ever before.
Yeah, and the idea that you're upset with him and complaining that he has low ratings. Well, if he has low ratings, then why are you worried about him, Barbara?
Well, this is funny to be talking about this in the past tense as if something terrible happened and now it's been resolved, because we all agree that it hasn't been resolved. In this specific instance, we were happy to see that, you know, Disney turned around and brought Kimmel back on and allowed him to say what he had to say, allowed him to do his job of poking fun of whoever is in charge, and it happens to be an easy target right now. But keeping in mind a couple of things that, as you mentioned, Dave, that Nextar and Sinclair are not airing, and that's about 20-25% of the market around the country. And yes, they own the stations, they have the right to choose, but when you are shuttering voices on your stations, then you are not serving the public interest, and they are the ones whose licenses ought to be in jeopardy. And Brendan Carr has been very forthcoming with his statements that this is just the beginning. He's not backing down. He's not going to stop going after what entities on the air that are unfavorable to the president.
as we are taping this, the affiliates are not airing the program. They, at least one of them said that they are in negotiations with ABC, so it may be available by the time this program airs.
And Nexstar says it's monitoring the show to see how they'll respond in the future. Now, Carr, you said, Barbara, he's reopened complaints that accuse ABC, NBC, and CBS of biased programming during the 2024 election, including, and I mentioned this last week, what's he going to do, go after Saturday Night Live? Investigating Saturday Night Live for a pre-election episode in which then-Vice President Kamala Harris was a guest. He's investigating PBS and NPR over accusations that the public news organizations violated rules that prevented them from airing commercials. He also warned that he can block media mergers that may harm local stations' independence. This is what I told my students this week, Barbara. Don't become complacent when you see something like this, because it's a big headline. Kimmel's back on the air. They're not done by any stretch of the imagination.
And also, people, just ordinary people, need to rise up and have their voices heard. Even if it's as simple as, I did send a letter, I don't know who's actually getting it, an email to Nexstar, and I sent something to a couple of names that were familiar to me of at the local station, and I went online for the Nexstar. I read their press release about their plans to, like, review the Jimmy Kimmel Show and try to find some corporate entity, like a real person, that I could knowingly send them an email. And it was a communication email, and I just sent a two-sentence letter saying that I strongly disagree with cutting off Jimmy Kimmel, bring him back, and look forward to hearing from you.
The public should not be secure in thinking that a station such as WAMC is immune to this. Every station in the country, theoretically, if you have a political commentary that the president doesn't like, you're in danger of the FCC calling and threatening your license. So this is not just the big boys playing here.
So right, Ira. It's so much more than just they took the money away. This guy can go after your license if he wants to. And what I thought was interesting was Ted Cruz and some of the other Republicans who came out not supporting anything that Kimmel said, but defending his right to say it. And maybe in Ted Cruz's part, it was more about they're going to use this against us if the Democrats get in power in the future.
Well, that's true. That's accurate. Where are there other Republicans saying the same thing? They should all be lockstep in this.
Yeah, the history, the call to history here echoes in the background when it comes to authoritarians and dictators and how they operate. And when you look at this particular situation and you see what's happening, you realize that we are not safe in this country without standing up. And when you said before, you know, people have to rise up and say so, they did in this case. You have to believe that the public response is what pushed ABC to put Kimmel back on the air. So it works, doesn't it?
Sure.
And what doesn't get as big headlines are things like the Pentagon saying that reporters who are covering the Pentagon need to sign a pledge saying that they are only going to report on official news, news that they say is news.
That, what do you think of that?
I think that no one should be signing that.
So if you had a bureau, a reporter at the Pentagon, and the reporter came to you as the editor and said, this is what they want me to sign, what do you say? And if you say, no, don't sign it, then what happens to your coverage?
I don't know exactly what happens. You have to get it from other sources. I agree that this is a dilemma, but I think it is a horrible mistake to start going down the path of signing anything like that, that you're agreeing to not report news unless it's something that they have officially released. That's not how news works.
No, they want the reporters at the Pentagon to be stenographers. Here's the press release. This is what you report on.
That's exactly what the Washington Post editorialized on this week. We sent it around, and on Tuesday they talked about this. They said the press is deeply unpopular. Media access is not exactly a top voting issue, but this kind of restriction would block some of the most important stories in modern times, including revelations of the shoddy conditions for wounded service members at Walter Reed National Military Medical Center, prisoner abuse at Abu Ghraib prison, and even the military's fabrication of evidence for UFOs. And don't forget, Hegseth had a little problem with sharing classified information. And so, you know, this may be a reaction to that and making sure none of that happens.
And wouldn't you say that the Pentagon and the government overall, they need the media still to get their messages across to a lot of people? Yes, they have their own social media platforms. They have their own websites. They have their siloed one-sided news outlets, but they want to reach the public through the media. So it would be a terrible mistake for anybody to sign anything that gives away their right to do their job.
But it's not new that military and authorities, police, they want to keep that information close to their vest. They want you to get the information they want to give
you. And, you know, from their point of view, I totally get that.
Yeah. And as you know, Ira, during Vietnam, that news was edited and blacked out, and you had to have the censors look at it before you went out.
At the end of the day, whether or not a reporter signs this piece of paper that the Pentagon wants, the good reporters, the plugged-in reporters, reporters who have sources, they're going to get a story, and it'll get reported, much to the dismay of the Pentagon. But I think there are too many quality journalists out there who are not going to let this go without doing their own journalism and reporting and serving the public that they're supposed to serve.
And if you sign something like that, whether it's a legitimate claim or not, if you didn't follow what you signed, couldn't the government then go after you for this breach of your promise?
Well, I don't know. I mean, as I understand it, the document that they're being asked to sign acknowledges that they won't print something without the permission of the Pentagon, but it doesn't say it. If you don't do it, you're going to be jailed. It just says you're not going to get your credentials anymore.
And then are they going to hold the media company that's publishing that information responsible?
Well, they can do whatever they want, but if they sue, they've got to prove with all the usual things to win a lawsuit. So.
Oh, because there's still a Times versus Sullivan at the moment.
By the way, you guys predicted this. You were right. The $15 billion lawsuit against the New York Times was tossed out by a judge this week.
The judge had it for about 2 minutes. It was so clear that it was a bad suit.
So are we going to win all this in the courts?
Well, the Trump administration has until, I think, another month to refile the lawsuit in a much more compressed status.
You can only imagine they will.
Right. It's not over.
No, it's not over.
They want this to go back to the Supreme Court.
Yeah, I'm sure they do. Well, that was Barbara Lombardo. Ira Fussfeld is here. I'm David Giustina, filling in for Rex Smith. The other panelists will be back next week, but this is our show this week, guys. And I want to remind folks that you can email us at media@wamc.org. And, well, we got quite a few letters last week, guys, and this had to do with the fact that WAMC stopped doing the sports report at 6:19 and 7:19. Maybe I shouldn't have asked, but
we know they're listening.
They are definitely listening, and they have opinions on either side, some very strong opinions on either side. But just listeners, I hope you'll just consider for a second that you're working for WAMC, and these are the letters in response you get. How do you make a decision? I just listened to the Media Project, says Blue Coyote Wagner, if that's how you pronounce the name. I just listened to the Media Project, and I would like to say that I hated the sports report in the morning. I could care less about sports for the most part. It's mostly about money as far as I'm concerned, and I found it aggravating to have to hear about sports twice in the morning. It's partly why I have switched to WFCR for news, as they provide more complete national and world news. I really don't care about local news for the most part. I don't need to hear about what happened at some local selectman meeting somewhere in the Hudson Valley. Sorry, Ira. And folks that do care can source a local paper. Now, this is the part I don't like. Also, I've learned to hate the endless verses of Pete Seeger. I feel that nobody really cares about editing the show and seems sloppy. Thanks, I edit the show. I do go out of my way to hear the Media Project, and I enjoy the perspective. And one listener commented that the song is dated. It is not. You guys want to defend Pete Seeger for just a second?
Newspaper men are such interesting people.
Yes, that's right. Well, that's wallow in corruption, crime, and gore. It must be prostitution, Ira. I don't know.
Now I can't bring all the lyrics to mind, but the lyrics to that song still hold true today for journalists, no matter what platform they're using, that the publishers have to go to ordinary folks for readers, or we could say listeners.
And big shots for their dough.
And big shots for their dough.
The writer made an interesting point about, I'm not interested in coverage of something in the Hudson Valley. It could have been anywhere, depending on where you're located. I faced the same issue when we started adding editions in the heyday of my newspaper. We added an edition in two different counties. And the concern was that news, let's say in the village of Catskill, New York, would not be of interest to somebody who is reading the paper in the village of New Paltz, New York, considerably farther south. But we found that there are issues that occurred in one community, even though it was not specific and the names were different. There are issues that all communities would be interested in and have maybe dealing with. And it gave that story relevance that you might not think existed for these stories.
So it depends on how that's presented. The topic might have a broad interest over various municipalities, but the specific coverage might have a very limited interest.
Which is why I brought up the fact, when we were talking about the sports, of how much sports there are in a 7-state listening area. And in WAMC itself struggles with this problem all the time. We're covering Massachusetts and Vermont and New York and a bit
of
New Jersey. So who's going to care what's happening in Springfield versus what's happening in Albany? Well, we try to draw those lines. And when you listen to us do the stories, like I did this morning, in fact, we mentioned that other states have joined in this coalition, that the New York State Attorney General, and that includes, and they're going after Capital One, that includes Massachusetts and Connecticut. So there are issues that transcend the borders.
Oh, I can recall on this station coverage prior to the approval and the eventual opening of the casino in Springfield, Massachusetts. And I found it interesting, not because I'm a big casino fan, but because in New York we were looking at the same issues. Here's what's involved. Well, here's the concerns about crime or other issues. It had nothing specific to do with Springfield, but it had something to do with our own community.
And it adds to your understanding of the casino situation when you know, wait a minute, why are we putting up another casino when there are all these casinos within driving distance? Isn't that going to bring down the profits and water down things and not be as profitable as all the projections say?
And then we'll swing back to sports, but on the news side of it for a moment, I don't know what process you have in the newsroom here at WAMC to say, okay, here's our very broad listening audience and the geographic areas that we try to bring material for our readers and listeners. How are we doing on that? Do we have stuff from Saratoga, Springfield,
right,
the Hudson Valley, Albany, whatever areas? Are you looking at that against how many people do you have from those areas? Where are your supporters coming from?
The answer is yes, we look at all of that. And we also look at the larger issues that affect all those communities. So one of the things that's been on the top of the agenda in politics is affordability. And so when you look at that, I mean, all the area's governors, they're all saying we need more affordable, we need more housing. So we cover the issues that are impacting a wide swath of the listening area.
I don't think we should be too defensive, and it's just interesting. I think some people believe that the decisions that are made by throwing stuff against the wall and seeing what sticks. But there are a lot of discussions of the pros and cons, whether it's at this radio station or at a newspaper or a TV station, and there is some thought that goes into it. It doesn't mean that the decisions are 100% correct all the time, but it's not by throwing spaghetti against the wall.
Right,
no.
But when we were working for the same company, Ira, and in Capital District, so the Saratoga and the Troy Record had the same owner for quite a while. And the owners, who were not local, seemed to think it was just fine for both of those publications to have the news from each other's markets, which was a way of having fewer people to cover stuff and you could still fill the news hall. And it's a terrible mistake because those were both focused on their specific communities and things, although there were some broader issues that could be made as, you know, interesting topics. Most of the stuff, if you live in Saratoga, you don't really care about what's happening in downtown Troy and vice versa, unless it's entertainment or whatever. So it's a tough situation for any media company.
Not to mention the amount of staff you have, which has dwindled and dwindled and dwindles and gives us less opportunities to do more stories. All right,
tell us more about the sports.
Back to sports. We're running out of time here. This is from D. Kelty. Your discussion today has inspired me to write. I do not miss the sports. You encourage people to let you know if they miss the scores. I imagine there are many more, like myself, a sustaining member who enjoy the additional news and interviews. So that's two for no sports. Now, here comes Dr. Ben Friedel from Oneonta, who he says, Bay State native, longtime Boston fan. All right, he's okay in my book.
Well.
All right, Barbara. All right, Ira. David et al., thanks for discussing the discontinuation of Sports Report on the recent media project. Now, this one got me. Like many of your listeners, I start my day with WAMC, and I get ready to leave the house and go to work. As an avid sports fan, I always looked forward to hearing the 620 and or the 720 scores from the night before, even to the point of turning up the volume on my radio so I could hear them while I'm in the shower. For me, it's the most efficient way to learn about the latest sports lead stories. That's just a little bit of Dr. Ben Friedel's letter. Thank you for writing, by the way, media@wamc.org. That's the issue that gets most people, right? It's habitual. You have a habit of listening, and now we've messed with that habitual experience, And you guys must see that all the time in the newspaper business when you take something away.
But as I pointed out last week, although there's a proliferation of sites on the internet or on TV where you can find out the score the night before, a lot of people just don't stay up for it. They want
it.
They're looking forward to it first thing in the morning. It's their first exposure to last night's games.
And one of the letter writers talked about just going with the big league sports.
This is Ron Brindle. Quite right. You read the letters, Barbara. Ron Brindle writes, I heard the reasoning about using the time for news instead of sports reports. Frequently, however, we hear the same story that was already referenced on the national broadcast. As for the concern about providing information for seven states, it would probably suffice to focus on scores and stories involving the major league teams serving the New York City and Boston markets, and of course, the Kentucky Derby, Belmont Stakes, and Saratoga track season. For those of us who aren't sports fanatics, those stories do qualify as news. I think that's a fair point. However, it's like a wedding. Once you start inviting people, more and more people end up on the list. And if you're going to just name those, someone else is going to write, wait a minute, what about Philadelphia? What about, you know, Buffalo? What about those major teams?
What about Philadelphia? Joe Donahue can get that himself.
Oh, boy. All right, Barbara. All right. Send your letter to media, or actually, you might want to send your letter to Roundtable. WAMC.org. Now, this is my favorite letter, guys.
All right, I'm ready.
It's my favorite because LP, a sustaining member from Columbia County,
thank you,
puts in the subject heading, Bear with a Cranky Response.
What does that mean?
It means this, Ira. Greetings. It sounded like you intentionally covered the cancellation of sports coverage as part of today's media show. However, this is talking about me now, folks, and I'm reading it. The ham-handed, roundabout, confusing, and long-winded explanation, in quotes, of why the station made this decision was very poorly handled. Perhaps if some advance thought would have been given to the statement, which reflects the station's new policy, it would have been time well spent. When the explanation wandered into, quote, all those hard-to-pronounce names of athletes, I thought it was a low moment, not only for the producer of the program, but for the station itself. Who would take exception to hard-to-pronounce names in news coverage? Hopefully no one. But why is this now considered a royal pain to get pronunciations correct with sports figures? It was a lame comment, and it bordered on offensive. Should all sports figures have American names to make it easier? The whole explanation ended up being a mashup and did not serve the station well. I believe George Will said, if you're explaining, you're losing. Thanks for this opportunity to vent.
Can I come to your defense on this,
Thank
David?
You. Go ahead.
Because I think that letter writer missed the point about trying to pronounce names correctly.
Correct.
That it is cringeworthy if you're listening to TV or radio broadcasting and they are mispronouncing the names of a player or an event
or a medicine.
What was the score? Acetaminophen versus ibuprofen. You need to do some research. You can't just look down at a piece of paper and go, oh my gosh, I don't know how to say this. It reflects very badly on yourself and on your outlet when you don't know how to pronounce something.
Which ultimately is the opposite of what he's accusing. What I was saying was, I am not going to allow a mispronunciation to go out over the air because it's absolutely necessary for me to know how to say that name. Unfortunately, LP, that takes time. And in the morning, I'm not, what I did this morning, for example, was write up a horrible situation over here in Albany that was breaking news. And I wouldn't have had time to write that up in the morning because I was too busy working with the sports. I give the same dedication to whether it's sports or news to making sure I pronounce everything correctly and that it's vetted and that it's accurate. That's what I was talking about. And as for no advance forethought, we've been talking about this for months, if not years. I spent a great deal of time with the managing editor and the station head to talk about this issue. And we came together in agreement. And I can totally understand that you weren't happy with it and appreciate your comments. And hope you'll keep listening and supporting the station, because we're a place that will say your letter no matter what it says. We'll read it, and we'll offer our explanation. What else can we do?
And are you still mulling the decision of how to handle the sports?
We are, in fact, because we've gotten so many letters. We're looking at it now.
Keep those letters coming, folks. And in the letter, like as one of the letter writers did, put the pronunciation of your name in parentheses.
That's right.
Which more newspapers should do.
But this is the job of media, not only to report the news, but to be willing to interact with their audience, no matter what they're saying. In fact, I have a theory that when someone writes and they're upset, just like LP, it's because they care about their station. LP loves the station. He's a sustaining member, and he deserves to be heard, right? I'm not perfect. I make mistakes. We all make mistakes. But if we're not willing to confront them, to speak openly and civilly with our audience, then we're not doing our jobs. So I hope you appreciate that LP. I hope you will all continue to write the Media Project at media@wamc.org. And I hope you will all support public media no matter what station you're listening to, even if you left us to go to WFCR. For Barbara Lombardo, Ira Fussfeld, you guys, I love you guys. And I'm so glad that I get to sit with you for the last 2 weeks and discuss the media issues. Don't worry, Rex will be back next week. And we only hope that you'll join us again for the Media Project. It's wonderful to represent the world. Now you remember Mrs. Sadie Smuggery. She wanted money to buy a new fur coat. To get insurance, she employed skullduggery. She up and cut her husband's only throat. She chopped him into fragments, she stuffed him in a trunk. She shipped it all back yonder to her uncle in Podunk. Now newspaper men meet such interesting people. It must have startled poor old Sadie's unk. Ting-a-ling-a-ling, city desk. Hold the press, extra, extra, read all about it. It's a mess, meets the test. Oh, newspaper men meet such interesting people. Like the richest girl who could not bake a cake. Ting-a-ling, ting-a-ling, ling-a-ling-a-ling. Now, newspaper men are such interesting people. They used to work like hell just for romance. The Media Project is a national production of WAMC, Northeast Public Radio. This week's projectors include Barbara Lombardo, adjunct professor at the University at Albany and former editor of the Saratogian, and Daily Freeman publisher emeritus Ira Fussfeld. You can listen to The Media Project anytime at WAMCpodcast.org or anywhere you get your podcasts. I'm your producer, David Gustino. Thanks for listening. Got a free new world to build. Meet the people, that's a thrill. All together fits the bill. Oh, newspapermen are such interesting people. It's wonderful to represent the world. Now, publishers are such interesting people. Their policy is an acrobatic thing. They claim to represent the common people. It's funny, Wall Street never has complained. Ah, but publishers have worries, for publishers must go to working folks for readers and to big shots for their dough. Now publishers are such interesting people. It could be prostitution, I don't know. Ting-a-ling-a-ling, circulation, ting-a-ling-a-ling, advertising, get those readers, get that payoff. What a headache, what a mess. Oh, publishers are such interesting people. Let's give 3 cheers for freedom of the press.